We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Folks, if you want a perfect example of dysfunctional government, come to Missouri. Absolutely the perfect textbook example of why government doesn't work right here in our state legislature. We are hot and heavy into the middle of another legislative session. We're right about smack dab in the middle. We end in the middle of May. And we have got a number of hot topics going on here in this state. One of them is right to work. Another is Common Core. We've got some voter issues going on in Missouri, voter ID, ballot, paper ballot issues, just a number. We're going to talk about several of those issues tonight. But we have in Missouri, if you've listened to the show before, we have a Republican supermajority in our legislature, majority in the House, majority in the Senate, and all of them are Republicans. All of them were elected by Republican conservatives who follow the party platform, Tea Party folks who believe in independent sovereignty, independent government, small government, and we cannot move the ball down the field. One prime example of that we're going to discuss tonight is right to work, and we're going to have Patrick Warner on a little bit later from Americans for Prosperity. They've been holding the rally cry, screaming the rally cry for right to work for a long time in this state, trying to help us push it through. It looks to me as if all of the conservatives, all of the Republicans, all of the people that want right to work in Missouri are not going to get it for one reason or another, and it's the Republicans who are going to drive a stake through its heart. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We're here every Wednesday at 7 p.m. I am happily joined tonight by Cindy McGee of Show Me Patriots. Dave's waiting in the wings, and we're just going to let him pop in whenever he feels like he wants to. One of the big issues that we're going to discuss this week is right to work. There have been a number of things that have developed since last week when we talked to you. One of them is an article that was in Missouri Torch. Dwayne Lester of the Missouri Torch doing a great job in shining light into the dark corners of the cesspool that is Jefferson City, came up with a video, a Republican legislator at a union rally decrying how we are going to defeat right to work in the state of Missouri. Cindy, I'm sure you had the opportunity to see this video this week.
I did, and I have to say that I was rendered speechless. So for people who know me, that's saying
that's
a lot.
That's not easy.
No, it's not easy, but I was rendered speechless.
Okay.
Absolutely. Not only was she speaking from a Democrat point of view, but she was applauding the efforts of Democrats in the video.
Republican legislator Ann Zaire from my county, St. Charles County. We lunched together on Friday afternoons at the Golden Corral for the Pachyderm meetings. Comes and gets the support of the conservative Republicans there in the county to get reelected. She's up for reelection again this year. It's the last term of her service there. And she's unopposed. and her seat for reelection, which is not unusual because the Republicans in St. Charles County frown very heavily on primaries. Once you're an incumbent, they frown very heavily on primaries. But I am telling you, and it's too late now to primary this woman because the sign up for candidate sign up has lapsed, I think, on March 24th, around that time period. Ann Zare will run for her last term unopposed in a Republican district and probably be reelected, although there are quite a few Democrats in that district, which may be why she was out there schmoozing with the labor unions and telling them she will not support right to work in Missouri. Absolutely unbelievable. Couldn't believe it when I saw it. I mean, there have been rumors for a very long time that there are a number of Republicans in St. Charles County in Missouri who were hiding under their desks trying to avoid having a vote of any bill of this type in this this session before the election. And she just comes right out, man, and blasts it. I mean, Cindy, I can't wait to see her on Friday at the Packerham meeting.
I can't wait to hear about that meeting. To be honest, I would love to be a fly on the wall. No, it was really stunning. You know, it's but you know something, Lisa? I'm going to say this. I am going to give her credit for one thing.
Oh, all right.
Speaking what she really thinks.
Well, you know, she was a Democrat. She was a registered.
For that. She's not hiding under her desk trying to pretend she's something she's not. She
well,
stood
that's
up,
true.
Said what she wanted to say, and I will take my hat off to her for that. At least she has honestly portraying an honest picture of herself, and it's up to the voters in her district to decide what they want to do with that.
That is true. And the sad, sad thing about that is that she will probably be reelected.
Yep.
The Republicans will fall into line because they would rather have somebody with an R. I mean, she used to be a registered Democrat. Did you know that?
I did not know that, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, they will fall into line and follow her over the edge of the cliff rather than putting a Democrat in that seat. And you know, in my mind, I am beyond that now. You know, I'll probably get kicked out of the Packerham Club. But if
Absolutely.
That seat fell to the Democrats, you know what? And if those seats don't start falling to the Democrats when the Republicans behave this way, we are just never going to get it together. We're
no.
never going to get it together.
You know, and, you know, I gave her the one compliment she's going to get from me. And now I just have to say, where are the rest of the Republicans in our General Assembly that are going to stand up and distance themselves from her first making such outrageous statements? And, you know, she said, don't forget the people who stood by you all these years are the Democrats. Don't forget them. Really?
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
really?
How
does the Republican caucus
Yeah,
really
how, you
stand
don't...
by a statement like that? How do you support who? How do you not distance yourself from that?
You know, family therapy, something. We need something here because we are drowning.
We need an intervention.
I cannot believe, you know, and it's crickets out here in St. Charles County. Nobody's talking about this. You know, nobody's talking about this egregious stepping outside of the boundaries, you know, everybody is, and you know what really makes me mad? This really just frosts my cookies, man. They work so hard to pull the collective into line. Everybody's got to get under the same tent. Everybody's got to, you know, you got to support them. It's better than having a Democrat in office. You got to get behind the same person. But they do nothing to pull these people into line when they stray from the party platform. They do nothing.
No.
What's that all about?
I don't know. There's, you know, and there's a disturbing trend during election years for there to be some deafening silences on a lot of things where suddenly the, you know, on off election years, there are those in the party who are willing to stand up and say what should be said and to you know, distance themselves from fellow Republicans, if you will, issues and to do it rather vehemently, but let an election year come along and they just close ranks. Like, the only option is to elect someone with an R behind their name. It does not matter what they really stand for. It doesn't matter what they've done. It doesn't matter what, you know, what they've voted for or haven't voted for, or, you know, any of the above. It's just, it's all about what's behind the name. Nothing else matters in election year. And and where the public is fed, the listening, the public that's paying attention, it's going, but what about this and what about that? And they're being told, shh, quiet, don't say anything. We can't afford to lose this election. We've got to get a Republican elected at all costs. It doesn't matter that it's a John McCain or an Ann's there or, you know, a Lindsey Graham or, you know, any
How do you ever expect to change anything?
Blah, 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 whatever, whatever the heck that gal's name was in New York back in 2010. It's just Dee Dee Spazafaza, you know, who then turned halfway through that election just before and became a Democrat. You know, it's just, it's mind-numbing. And especially at this point, 5 years down the road from the election of a socialist sociopath to office as President of the United States, and all of the things that have been shoved down our throats since then. And, you know, he is, that man will lie when the truth would serve him better. And speaking of that, just a little sidecar note here, just real quick. Did you hear him this today talking about how, you know,
They had to get everything
with Obamacare done the hard way. They didn't have, you know, millions of dollars to spend doing it. And when in truth, they've spent $700 million, taxpayer dollars, on advertising for Obamacare.
Yes. Yes.
And it will be in the billions of dollars, because there is actually a provision in Obamacare for them to finance promotion of Obamacare. Yes.
Oh, you have got to be kidding.
Oh, no. And it will add up to into the billions of dollars over the next couple of years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They can finance propaganda? Their propaganda? So what was the Russian newspaper before the Cold War ended?
Pravda.
We have Pravda now. It's all it is. Because there's so Obama's on today, blathering on about how great we've got the 7 million. Oh, we just lost Dave. How great we've got the 7 million going on, and there's no facts to back it up. There's nobody in the press corps asking questions. Are there 7 million signed up and paid? Are they just signed up? You know, are how many of those 7 million are people who actually lost their health care? Because you yanked it out from underneath them, or how many were uninsured that are signed up for Obamacare? None of those questions are being asked. None of those hard questions are being asked to find out, you know, and wasn't it like 40 million or 30 million people that didn't have health care that they were targeting to help with Obamacare, and they're raving over 7 million?
Yeah.
Some crazy number like that? And we're all supposed to genuflect when he walks into the room because he's given us this great catastrophe that's going to ruin our economy and promote death panels and ruin the health care of how many billions of Americans that are floating around. You know, just good God, my head's going to explode.
I know. The campaign media analysis group said that affordable care – ads for and again. Well, never mind. I'm reading the wrong thing. Anyway.
It's
unbelievable. Not to mention the $1 billion that's already been spent on the glitchy error riddle website.
Oh, yeah, rebuilding the website. Exactly. Oh, my God.
And all of that's coming out of our pockets. What part of we're broke as a country
Yeah, $17 trillion in debt. Absolutely.
Right. We're spending that kind of money promoting socialism in our medical system in this country. Really?
Mm-hmm. It's all about presentation. It's all about culture,
and where, And I just have to ask, where is the media? Here's little unknown Lisa and I sitting here talking to our little audience. And we get it. It's not that hard. Where are you, media? I mean, come on, really? A free press, the free press talked about in our Constitution and our Bill of Rights.
Yeah, it's out to lunch.
Is a free press that our founders fully intended to be one of the checks and balances on an out-of-control government that we're, the out-of-control government that we're facing. And our current media is so pathetic. They not only don't promote, don't tell the truth, they are active participants in deceiving the American people and being the propaganda arm of what is beginning to look to me like a very, very artfully done coup in the United States to overthrow our Constitution and our way of government.
Absolutely. Frightening.
It is frightening.
And there's no outrage, because I think there are enough people in the last two or three generations that have studied the Constitution enough to know what they're losing.
Right.
There's no outrage.
And then we've got the Republican Party, who is supposed to be the party of conservatives and liberty and small government and the Constitution, et cetera, who has sidled up to grassroots activists for the last 5 years, co-opted many groups, and led them down the primrose path with the thought that they were actually going to get something accomplished to defend liberty, when in fact they were just being co-opted and usurped and used for the purposes of the party without their full knowledge or realizing it. And, you know, and they don't even have the gonads to bring something like right to work for a vote and put their name on it or not.
Exactly.
To own it or not own it. They just don't have the gonads. Common Core, we've been fighting for that. We've been fighting to get something done about that for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to something.
Did you listen to the hearing today?
Yeah, I listened to part of it today, and there was one person on there talking about how, you know, we can't do away with Common Core now. It would just be too costly to the state. We've invested too much, and we're too far down the path.
We've worked so hard.
And blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, legislators, if that's really true, it's on you, because we've been – Gretchen led the pack on this, Gretchen Logue with Missouri Education Watchdog. God bless her and many others, and you were with her there in the beginning, Lisa, and have been all along. And just calling it out about this Common Core issue when it was brought to our attention before it really gained real traction in our we could have stopped it 4 years ago, and when many of us tried to talk to our legislators about it, we were told to sit down and shut up.
Put on our lip condoms and go kiss butt.
The condoms on our lips and learn that if we want to get something done, we needed to learn to, you know.
Yeah, just to be nice. To be nice.
I don't know.
And get along.
It will come as no surprise to those who know me. I have no patience for this.
You know, one thing that I noticed when I was, they had this big Senate hearing today, you know, for one of the right to work, or I'm sorry, one of the Common Core bills, and they had, I sat and I listened to a good portion of those hearings. I didn't listen to all of it, but I never heard one, it was all about the work that had gone into bringing this together and all of the work that we've done over the past so many years and all of the efforts of all of these fine people that have worked so hard. And, nobody is talking about the kids and how this is going to prepare them for the future and give them tangible evidence on how that they can survive and get into college and succeed in college and become world leaders in technology fields or any – I mean, none of that was going on.
And
it was all
interestingly, but if you listen to it today, there were teachers testifying today, too. There were a lot of teachers there in support
of
Common Core. You didn't see any of them sitting there trembling and with shaky voices testifying because they very likely could lose their jobs
been
threatened and been browbeaten over the past 4 years because they were standing up against Common Core. You didn't see any of those teachers trembling that were there today.
Mm-mm.
That were there to represent their opinion that Common Core is good. And yet last week we had teachers there who were there and wanted to remain anonymous, and teachers who were there who were testifying under extreme duress because they were absolutely terrified of what was going to happen to them when they went back to their school district. Because they've been told that they were not to do this.
There was a viral video.
What happened to free speech in America? What happened to our rights to assemble? What happened to our rights as citizens for a redress of grievances about things that we think are wrong, even if it means we disagree with our boss?
Exactly. There was a viral video that went out last week on Missouri Education Watchdog of a teacher that testified last week about the evils of Common Core and what she and many other teachers, and then I think there have been a few more that have popped out. And we're going to have somebody on, I think, next week or the week after. Another teacher has come forward and wants to talk about what she's seen as she's been watching this Common Core debacle unfold. And, folks, we're about to go into next, in Missouri. We have our April elections for school board in Missouri next week, and I have to tell you, if you haven't gotten a clue up to this point about what school board elections are really all about, you really need to pay attention to this Common Core debate, because what this is it's about money and power and control. It doesn't have a damn thing to do with your kids. And my school, I mean, I sat on a school board a little over a decade ago, and it was one of the toughest races in the region. As school board members, we raised just boatloads of money to fight the NEA. If you knew what goes on in these little dinky little school board races and the fights that you have to rage against this establishment NEA who has control of your school boards, You would think twice when you walked into your school and you looked at your teacher. You'd want to know if they were paying union dues or not. Because I'm telling you, these folks that are loyal to the union are not loyal to your kids. And you need to think about that when you go into the voting booth next April 8th, next week, next Tuesday, and think about who you're putting on your school boards. Are you going there? Because I'm telling you, the only thing that those union members care about is the money and the control. They don't give a damn about what happens to your kids. And how well they're educated or how well they're prepared to go through school and life after school, they do not care one little bit. And they want nothing more than to be able to get your kids engulfed in a Common Core curriculum where they can mold and shape their minds and teach them not to question, only to lead, only to follow, and never question the authority of whoever is leading them.
Right.
It is that complicated, and it is all that wrapped up in your school board elections. You need to pay attention. Before next Tuesday, you need to find out who's endorsed by the union and who's not, and you need to vote for the person who is not endorsed by the teachers' union.
Absolutely. I think running for school board is probably one of the toughest races a person can enter to enter the race for school board. And, you know, Lisa, if people don't ever get anything else, they need to understand that the battle for liberty or tyranny, the battle for this country as a constitutional republic, or the new socialist states of America, begins and ends in the classroom.
Yes, it does.
That war has been being waged for years in America's classrooms, and people are just now really starting to wake up on a larger scale to what's been going on. Common Core is their end game. What they're doing with Common Core is not new. It's just simply their end game. If this is allowed to stand, and these states around the country that are fighting it, like Missouri, to get it out and to put a stop to it, to end it, if they are unsuccessful, we will have lost all control of our children's education in this country. It will then become a federalized program, which is totally unconstitutional.
Well,
they know
it already is a federalized program. It already is.
Yes, that's why they've used it. That's why they did Common Core the way they did. That's why they came in the way they did, to give the facade that it was not federalization of our schools, but it is.
Yep. We're going to come back in a few minutes, folks. We're going to talk a little bit more about this Common Core issue. We've got a lot of things going on, but we've got Patrick on the line waiting to give us an update from Jefferson City on all the latest that has been going on about right to work. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the Justina case, the Justina Pelletier case, and a lot of other things. Stay with us. We will be right back.
It really is time. It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
This is Lisa Payne Nager. We're back. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm here tonight with Cindy McGee, and we'll have Patrick Warner from Americans for Prosperity on with us in just a minute. But I did want to report before we go on that a few minutes before we went on the air, I found out that, or there was breaking news that there had been another shooting at Fort Hood. And Fox News is now reporting that there are 4 dead and 14 injured in the shooting of Fort Hood in the wake of that soldier that has gone rogue, promising to commit jihad within the service at some branch, some level. So right now, Fox News is reporting 4 dead and 14 injured in that Fort Hood shooting, and we will keep an eye on that and see how that's going throughout the evening for you folks. Top of the show. We started our rant with Right to Work. Only got halfway through it before we got sidetracked on other issues. There's so much to rant about, so many things going on in Missouri with Right to Work, and most of the bad stuff is being led by the Republican Party, I fear, here in this state. We've got a lot of issues with the current bill that's going on, and I know that there's been a lot of ruffled feathers going through the legislature over the last week about, are we going to have a vote, who's going to vote, are we going to not vote, whatever. Anyway, Patrick Warner from Missouri Americans for Prosperity is here to fill us in and tell us what the latest news is. Thanks for being on tonight, Patrick.
Hey, thanks for having me, Lisa and Cindy. It's good to be with you guys again.
So how is the cesspool that we call Jefferson City? What's going on down there?
Yeah, you know, before I get to the Right to Work, I was listening to you all in the second half of your top of the half-hour rant, and you were talking about those local races. And you and your listeners may not know, this is the second year we've done what we call it's a no-mo spending. It's a municipal project. And did you know that this year there's over 260 local tax increases at some type of tax increase, so it's a bond measure, a property tax increase, a use tax, a sales tax, over 260 across the state. You know, there were 280 last year in April. There's another 260 this year. So, yeah, you had talked about the school board races and the importance of people getting out in there, and this is where liberty meets the road, right? I mean, this is where we can make a difference. And I tell you, you know, in my experience, and most people don't show up in April, but you know, this is a real opportunity to say enough is enough, folks. So I just wanted to bring that up.
And that's a perfect point, because they put these ballot initiatives on the ballot in April and August when there's low voter turnout. So they know they can get their union folks out there. They know they can get their supporters out there to vote for these tax increases easily.
Yeah, you know, a typical April election turns out somewhere around 15%, but I would say, you know, 15% of the people show up and 100% of the people pay the new sales tax increase.
There you go. That's so sad. Do you have any numbers, Patrick, or can we get any numbers on how many of those tax increases passed last time around?
Yeah, you know, if someone wants to get some exact numbers and figures, if you go to nomospending.com, we have last year's figures, which were 80% of 280 local tax increases passed.
Oh my God! What are people thinking?
Yeah, so that's why we did it again, and we've been around the state and we've done some press conferences talking about the impact these sales taxes have. So I'm hoping that maybe the little bit that we did to talk about this, to create awareness about this, that maybe 50% passed this time. I mean, it's frustrating.
Yeah, I just don't understand why people think they have all this money to pay in taxes. You should have been here in St. Charles County. I know we had a huge ambulance district on the ballot that they're trying to pass, and it's huge. And they've done nothing to cut costs. I mean, it just you know, they feel like they've got an open main line to the money, I guess. Drives me crazy.
It is. And look, we got sidetracked again.
let's get back on the right to work.
You're right. I'll go back to, okay, so this is, you know, the right to work issue, and for your listeners, they may not know, we launched what's called the Path to Prosperity Initiative. It's 9 policy issues, and one's lower taxes, one's smaller government, one's education reform, and one of the 9 is worker freedoms, and that's, you know, like a paycheck protection or a right to work issue, right? So we think, if you take a cumulative look, a comprehensive approach to restructuring Missouri, that we really can get things back on track, get us out of stagnation and growing, right? So one of the topics is right to work, and that's what is hot in Jefferson City. It's been hot all year long. And so earlier this week, they passed what's called the paycheck protection. I think it was like at 1 o'clock in the morning they were debating it and talking about it. And I think it passed with like 88 votes in the House. And so that's on its way to the Senate. And then the caucus met and they talked about right to work. And, you know, people don't share private conversations, you know, what happens in caucus. But I understand the tone to be in that caucus. It was a very good conversational theoretical, analytical approach to the topic, right? It was, you know, this is an opportunity to say that the state of Missouri wants to move this state forward and compete and be more competitive for jobs. And I heard one analogy, Lisa, and I thought this was fantastic. You know, when we think about right to work and we think about, you know, what these site selectors look at states, and they look at states based on, you know, what's your job pool, what sort of education systems, but one of the little boxes on the site selectors box is, are you a right-to-work state? And it's sort of like when you're looking for, it's sort of like when you're looking for a home. You say, I want 3 bedrooms, I want a nice kitchen, and I want a 3-car garage. Well, if someone comes back and says, you know, look, it only has 2 bedrooms, well, that sort of takes that issue off, that house is no longer really what you're going to look for. And it's the same concept when businesses look at states and they'll say, are you right to work? And if we're not, they'll look elsewhere, right? And so I'm hearing that the conversation that was had, whether it was late Monday, early Tuesday, I'm not exactly sure when they met, you know, as a caucus, but the conversation was a really healthy one, and I'm optimistic. I'm encouraged. I think folks really understand the need to talk about this issue, educate their voters on it, and bring this up for a vote. So I'm optimistic.
Okay, so there's a couple things, Patrick. There's a couple bills, a couple right-to-work bills in the legislature this year. The one that has legs is the one that puts it on the ballot in August. The other bill, which I would have personally preferred, it was for to have my legislature vote on it, so that we don't leave it up to the unions to spend millions of dollars in fighting the constituency out here in trying to get a right-to-work thing passed and, when they put it as a ballot initiative. I have a real big problem with them pushing this ballot initiative bill.
That, you know, that's right. And you may have to, when we're talking about I guess would reference the strategy of this topic and how to get it done or move it forward, right? You know,
if we lose in August, we've pretty much lost right to work forever.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? So one path is what you're suggesting or what you're talking about is legislature has a joint resolution, they pass it out of the House with a simple majority, pass it out of the Senate with a simple majority, and it goes to the voters. Now, that's going to require those who oppose it to campaign and make state their case, and those who are against it to do the same, and that takes money and time and energy and resources, and it's a risk. I mean, it was sort of what you're saying. It's a risk that if that doesn't happen, we lose the issue. Or the other way is to have your legislators pass it with a simple majority of the House and Senate, send it to the governor, who we know what's going to happen there. He's going to veto that. So it's got to come back, and we've got to override that. And I think the reality of the situation is, whether we like it or not, is that there's no way that they could override a governor's veto on this topic. And so I think that's really the internal fight or discussions that they're having amongst themselves of, if we're going to do this, how are we going to get this done, right?
Okay. So, I mean, and people will disagree with me till the cows come home. But, you know, I'm fine with having the governor veto it. And then I want to put it back on my legislature for them to pass it. We have a veto-proof Republican legislature. If they can pass it and get it on the governor's desk once, why can't they override a veto?
Yeah, I think that is certainly a school of thought to say, hey, look, we sent you up there to make the hard decisions. We didn't send you up there to pass something, send it to the voters, and wipe your hands of it. Let's get this done. Let's send it to the governor. Let's bring it back. Let's try to override it. If we don't, then we know who's on record for it and who's on record against it. And we continue to take this topic next year and in the years ahead to get it done.
And at least we keep it alive. But if we put it on the ballot in August, it's probably dead forever, or for the foreseeable.
If it loses, yeah, that's right.
So tell me why there's so much enthusiasm for the August initiative way.
I guess I wouldn't call it enthusiasm. That's probably not the right word I would use amongst them. I think that the folks like you and like our group and a number of other groups and organizations out there, you know, ever since Michigan did theirs and Indiana, et cetera, we really got energized, and we are surrounded by right-to-work states except for Illinois, and we said, why not Missouri? Why isn't Missouri? And we really challenged those folks to take this topic up. It is not something that they wanted to, frankly. I mean, the conversation late last year was, no way will we talk about this, and now the conversation is, there's no way we're not going to vote on it. So, I mean, it's because of you and our members and other folks putting pressure on them and force them to talk about this and force them to bring it up is really the reason that we're here, right? And I think that's a good thing. Whether it actually comes to fruition or not, I think where we are today is very positive on this topic.
Okay. So where are we exactly? Other than, I mean, we've got folks talking. We've got Republicans like Ann Zare poo-pooing it. You know, we've got a lot of other conservative, so-called conservative Republicans hiding under their desks, worried about it. But where are we really? How is this? And I'm also hearing, you know, well, it may get through the House, but it'll die in the Senate. Where are we?
Yeah. Let me take a step back in order to answer that question. Okay. You know, if you look at how this issue came to pass in other states like Wisconsin, like Michigan, like Indiana, for example, in terms of recent history, you know, all three of those states had one thing in common that we don't have, and that's a Republican governor. All three of those made that happen. They battled for it in their legislatures, but at the end of the day, they had a governor that was willing to sign it. So maybe understanding the landscape of how that happened, you know, is maybe helpful in the tactical or strategical discussions here. So that gets us back to Missouri. So where are we is really, you know, the question. I think that it's still incumbent upon us to continue every day for the next, you know, two weeks, 3 weeks, at least till May 15th, to try and educate them and talk to them and express upon them the importance of this topic because, again, enthusiasm is not the right word, but they are discussing it. They did pass paycheck protection, and they are going to take the ballot initiative version up in the House, I'm hearing, is maybe possibly Monday of next week. And so for those of us who don't want it to go to the ballot, who do want this issue to pass and send it to the governor, I think we still have time to do that. We just got to keep on them to do it. But I that's where we are, and it's much, much further than we were 4 or 5 months ago.
So in your opinion, based on the rumblings that you're hearing there on the ground in Jefferson City, is it possible even at this point to keep the other bill alive and keep this, keep the legislators responsible for voting it through rather than putting it on the ballot?
Yeah, look, anything's possible in Jefferson City, right? I think that where they are today is that they have an overwhelming majority in the House, and there are folks in, whether it's leadership or within the caucus, to say, look, you have enough votes to just pass this with simple majority, you know, let some of our, quote, members who are in these swing districts, you know, take a walk or vote no. I mean, that's their conversation, right? I'm not agreeing with them. That's what they're saying. And so it's easy for them to say, okay, let's just simple majority, get this out, send it to the voters, and, man, stop calling me, right? I mean, get your phones off my back. But, look, we got them this far, right? And so we just got to keep on it. And if your listeners and you and me and others don't want to send this to the ballot and we want to make them vote on it and send it to the governor and try a veto override and see who's with us and who's not, then we just got to stay on it. But be encouraged in the sense, and your listeners should be encouraged in the sense that we're able to talk about this. We're actually to a point where we've convinced them that this is a good thing to do. Now we're talking about which path is better. So we just got to stay on it.
Okay. Patrick Warner, Americans for Prosperity, you have been fighting the good fight down there. I don't know how you do it. It's pretty crazy place, that Capitol in Jefferson City. It makes you a little nuts going through the meat grinder down there.
It does. Amazing. It gives me more gray hair, but at least I tell people it makes me look smarter, if nothing else.
Okay, Patrick, is there any place that we can go to get more information about Americans for Prosperity and all the battles that you guys are waging across the state?
Yeah, thank you for asking. You know, there's really two sites. I mentioned one earlier. We have the project, that tax project called NoMoSpending.com. But if you wanted to see the sort of full range of topics that we are engaged in, if you go to www.moafp.com, you'll see all of our action items. And actually on that page, the moafp.com one, we have a right to work petition as the topic we've been talking about here. So we have that and all the other issues we're tracking.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Patrick, and I hope you'll come back very soon and give us the lowdown on what you're finding out down there.
Anytime. I always enjoy being with you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Patrick. Okay, we're going to take a break, and we will be right back.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
The government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne-Nager, and I'm here with Cindy McGee, and we just kind of raked Patrick Warner over the coals a little bit over Right to Work. I don't mean to be so hard on him, but...
I had something I wanted to ask and didn't get the chance. But that's
okay.
Oh,
I'm sorry. You should have jumped in.
No. I was just going to ask him if at the end of the day, come August, you know, what we've ended up with is a ballot initiative that the legislature passes for the people to decide on right to work in Missouri, and we lose right to work because we can't mount an effective campaign against the unions that are going to pour into Missouri with millions of dollars to spend to defeat it. Is that then still going to feel like a victory? And, well, at least we got to talk about it. Is that really enough?
And I thought I was being hard on him.
I mean, I like Patrick, and I he's doing a great job. And I understand, we both understand, Lisa, how the game is played in Jefferson City. You and I have in our own way, decided we don't want to play that game anymore. But, you know, I don't know.
You've got to have people with him down there. You have people down there beating the bushes. You have to have it because of the way the system set up. And I think he's trying, you know, I think he's just trying to move the ball down the field. But I think your question is really valid, and I think I kind of posed that to him in one form or another anyway.
You were nicer.
Well, yeah, a little, maybe not a little.
not a lot, but you were a little bit nicer.
But the reality is, I mean, if you look at it, you know, talking about it means nothing. And we have all of these problems in our state and in the country, because we're just talking about stuff. And the reality is we have all of these Republicans in Jefferson City who are being elected in 2014, but all they do is sit on their hands, and they don't have the backbone that it takes to worm themselves out of a wet paper sack, stand up for an issue. Did I just say all that? Did that just come out of my mouth?
It did come out of your mouth.
And, you know, you either are for right to work or you're not. And you make your vote and you live with it, you know, and people either reelect you or don't. I mean, they're going to reelect Ann Zare in her district, you know, and that's the sad thing, is these people will get reelected regardless of how they vote. And for them going on the record, well, here's what the real situation is they're not going to get reelected if they disappoint the unions, because they know the unions will fight back, but they don't have the confidence in the voters to do the right thing or to not do the right thing, to stand up and vote their conscience. They know that the union can rub them out if they want to, and that's why we are ineffective in Jefferson City, because the lobbyists are more effective than the voters.
Right.
And that's the sad reality.
Right. It is a sad reality, but you know. Yep, it's a sad reality. And the thing too, in defense of the voters, I will say this. There's not much defense for the voters, but in defense of the voters, we're not paid for the amount of time that some of us have spent fighting this stuff. We're
right.
In the lobbyists are, and the average citizen, just even people who have started to try to get involved at certain points in time, and I've talked to a few of those over the years too that got involved at one point and just looked at everything and just threw their hands up and said, this is just hopeless. And I think that a lot of people come away feeling that way, and it's like, I have a full-time job, I'm working, I have children to raise, I have bills to pay, I have, you know, responsibilities and things that I'm having to do. I've elected these people to go and do what they're supposed to, and they're not doing it. And I think people just get to the point where they either just don't get involved because they've listened to other people talk about how corrupt it is, or you know, or disinterest or apathy, and that's part of it too. There is a large percentage of people in this state, in this country, who are just apathetic and really don't deserve the republic they have. That's the truth. There are many others who do, they just don't even know where to start fighting or how to do it. They've been discouraged. They throw their hands up and they say, I can't make a difference.
Well, yeah,
well,
they look
really
at their government
can't.
And it's just too overwhelming for them. Yeah, they really don't feel like their vote matters. They don't really feel like, you know, anything they say.
No, and I think some of the people who don't vote because they don't think their vote matters. They don't think that their voice, they don't really believe they have a voice.
Yeah. When you have a 15% voter turnout, in a district, that's just sad. I mean, that just speaks volumes. And we'll probably, if you have a 15%, that's probably a good voter turnout.
50%, yeah. But you've got to remember that only 50%, 15. What's really sad, though, is when you break it down, only 50% of eligible voters even register to vote. So the numbers on the voter turnout are only reflecting the 50% who registered to vote.
Yeah. And most of those folks that are registered to vote are, you know, they're for the opposition. The opposition gets their people out. They have meetings and talk to their folks about, you know, you go out and you vote this way, this way, this way.
Right.
And they do.
They know how to get out the vote.
That's why you have teachers' unions supporting the majority of the candidates on school boards. That's why in fire districts and ambulance districts, you're spending tons and tons of money to run these districts that don't need to have that much money spent on them because they're union-dominated board members, because those union-dominated board members go out and vote.
Right.
It's just, oh, my God, just ridiculous.
It's a mess, I would love to
see
Missouri become Right to Work, because I've lived in Right to Work states, and I am here to testify that the economy and job situations and everything, contrary to what the unions will tell you and union workers will see, those who belong to unions will say, the bottom line is I've lived in those states, and the conditions and the economy and job situations and everything are far better than what we face in Missouri. And, you know, my quality of life is not better in Missouri because the unions are in here and we've failed to be a Right to Work state. I would argue that the opposite is true.
Yeah.
So,
I would agree.
Anyway, enough about that.
Oh, let's see. Well, let's talk about Justina. I'm looking for another story that was on the Blaze today that I wanted to follow up with it. And I can't find it, so I'll look for it while we talk about that. But anyway, Justina Pelletier. There was a story, and you follow this much more closely than I do, Cindy. You're so much better informed on this. The Pelletier family wants to take up a Harvard Law professor, Alan Dershowitz, offer to help.
Yep.
What do you think about that?
I think it's great. I think that at this point that pursuing other constitutional violations against their family as a result of what has happened, they've got to get this case out of the hands of this Judge Johnston that has been, you know, so negligent in his responsibility towards this child and this family. So I think if Alan Dershowitz can give them their team some advice and constitutional input and so forth, it'll be, I think it'll be great. Because, you know, they're between a rock and a hard place. That's the truth. They really are. And the attempts, and I have been encouraged, there have been some attempts to really make the Pelletiers look bad, not that they're perfect, but to make them look really bad. And, you know, but I have to say the Boston Globe did a story last week. It was a two-part, and it was really long. But they did an excellent job of just putting this whole thing out there to look at everything that's happened from day one, including the allegations against the Pelletiers that came out last week as a result of the court records that were leaked and so forth, and that the Connecticut, their home state of Connecticut, agreed with Massachusetts' decision to keep Justina from her family, et cetera, et cetera. And the Boston Globe debunked all of that. So that was good. I mean, because you just have to wonder, Lisa, what is in it for some of these people that they're willing to take this all the way to the wall and back again with this one child and her family?
Yeah, I don't understand that. You know, unless they're protecting some. I mean, and usually in these things, it's about following the money. If you can follow the money trail, you usually find out what the deal is. But
right.
I'm telling you.
One of the things that they hit upon in the Boston Globe story, which really made me sit up and go, wow, this is coming from the Boston Globe, is that they talked about this. I wish I had that story pulled up right now. They talked about the fact that this is happening way too often, not just at Boston Children's Hospital, although it's happened a lot at Boston Children's Hospital, but that this medical abuse argument is being used a lot and is becoming a real ploy to divide, to take children away from perfectly fine families, and that there's a, and you know, to support this, and I think also Fox News had a story there, that doctor that serves on their, he's one of their commentators, talked about, you know, parents can make their children sick, but do we want to take these children away from all these parents? For example, you know, parents are arguing, or you have a controlling parent, and the child becomes uptight and stressed, and then other stressors at school come in, and the kid becomes more stressed, and suddenly they develop more problems with their asthma or something. So do we take the kids away because the parents stressed them out at home? Really? Because that's where this medical abuse argument is leading. That's what it is accomplishing. It is completely dividing and destroying families. And the DCF gets involved, and they have autonomy. They truly do. And that's the scary part, too, Lisa, and we've talked about that. DCF can act arbitrarily to take a child away. They don't have to have a reason. They just have to, in their minds, they have to believe, all they have to do is believe that there's a reason that this child could be at risk with this family, and they can remove them from the home.
You know, and it's not just encompassing the world of parents and children. It's spreading to the elderly. There was a story on The Blaze, and I can't find it. I'm trying to find it, and I can't find it. Today, there was a story on The Blaze about a Texas man, an elderly man, who the hospital or the state took custody of the man because they were afraid that he couldn't take care of himself anymore, and totally usurped the family's authority on taking care of this guy. He didn't want to be committed to a hospital. He wanted to go home and live out his days with his family. And in Texas, they totally usurped his authority and committed him to a hospital. I think is I can't find the story, but I think that's how it went. Did you see that story today?
I did see it, and I think that is kind of how it went down, as best I recall. But yeah, and you've got.
Because they declared that he wasn't competent to take his own medicine, or they didn't feel that he had sufficient home, the care that was being provided by his family wasn't sufficient, or, you know, some authority decided over and above what he wanted to do, how he wanted to live out his last days, you know?
Right. We've also got veterans who don't have good family support that are at risk as well with this kind of stuff through the VA, that they can determine that a veteran, you know, that these men, you know, and a lot of them are older, and, you know, there have been instances where that's been done too. The VA says, you know, this person is incompetent and can't do this, that, or the other thing. So we've got issues where this whole medical profession now, our medical, doctors are, and institutions really seem to be exerting a frightening tendency to think that they have the right to intervene at will and decide that they can just take over an individual or family's lives and completely turn it upside down. And, you know, the doctor on Fox, when he was talking about this situation, he said, you've got two well-respected hospitals in Boston, Massachusetts, that are in complete opposition to each other over what is wrong with Justina Pelletier, and now you've got the family and the child, because the hospital is now allowed to do this, that they have been able to take the child that has Justina under their care now, has the power to take her away from her family and completely separate her. I mean, she is completely separated from her family now. And under the, DCS in Massachusetts owns her. Department of Children's Services.
Yeah,
the judge
gave
them that last week. The family no longer has any say in what is going to happen to her. And it's, I can't imagine being those parents. And I, you know, everyone needs to think about this. We're talking about Justina Pelletier, but you know, but your child
could
name
just
on it.
As easily
be going through this,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all because she was delivered to a hospital and the doctor wasn't available to see her at the time, and she saw an ER doc who usurped everybody's authority. And this could, I mean, the next time you take your parents in for an emergency room visit, or I mean, it's not just about children and family services anymore.
Right.
It's at any level. Walking into
a
hospital.
Boston Globe brought out the fact that her doctor, the doctor that she was sent to Boston Children's Hospital to see by Tufts, her doctors at Tufts, they sent her there because her doctor, her gastroenterologist that had been seeing her for a couple of years and working with her was at Boston Children's. That's why he sent her there. The psychiatric department intervened when she was admitted to the ER. They refused to bring her doctor, the gastroenterologist, in, and when he tried to inject himself or, you know, to see her and to get into the case, they refused. They allowed him to see her once. They've refused to put him in a roundtable discussion with DCS and the hospital and the other doctors, which is normally, that's the procedure that would be followed, to allow him to be a part of coming up with a plan for her care and medical treatment. He's been denied that. And this is has been her doctor up until the psychiatrist at Boston Children's intervened and decided that she was suffering from a psychiatric disorder, not a physical disorder.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's outrageous what they've done.
It's got to be about the money. Yeah, there's got to be some big, huge money-making scheme. It's just got to be. I cannot imagine that it's not anything else.
And I think at the end of the day too, it's gone so far, and they've done this too. And the Boston Globe story talked about other cases that the exact same thing has been done. And they typically, Boston Children's Hospital, one of their modus operandi in doing this to families is when a child is brought in with an unusual disorder that is a newer disorder that there isn't as much research and so forth on this disease, and it's escaping my brain. As much as I've read about this, you'd think I wouldn't. Mitochondrial disease.
Mitochondrial,
but
yeah.
Justina has, yeah, mitochondrial. They've only been aware of this since the 1980s, so it's a fairly new, not new disorder, but it's been newly diagnosed and recognized in the American Journal and medical journals and so forth and so on, and doctors that treat it and so forth, and there are some disagreements about how to do it, and it has nothing to do with what they're trying to do to her at Boston Children's Hospital. But, you know, so Boston Children's Hospital, apparently they have a very voracious psychiatric staff that really wants to take this over. And something else I didn't know until I read the Boston Globe story is that a lot of these hospitals now have what are called medical child protection doctors. In other words, their job is to look for abuses against children and these types of situations in Boston. And that's what the doctor who intervened in Justina's case, that's what she does.
It's not just about going to the hospital to get stitches anymore, folks.
Nope. You better be careful where you take your child and what you tell them.
Wow.
And, you know, and so, and as soon as the parent starts disagreeing or really advocating for their child, that's the first sign that they look for that the parent is abusing the child.
Oh, man. It just never ends.
It's mind-boggling. It really is.
Gets worse.
I should have had more of my notes on that Boston case in front of me, that Boston Globe story, because it was very well done, very well written, and it really, you know, it's, I was really surprised to see a mainstream media news agency take this on and really debunk and just be really honest about what's happening.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just too big now. It's just getting too big. You can't push it away. And a little girl's going to die. I mean, she's, you know,
she's really sick, and she's getting
every
worse.
Week.
Yeah,
We hear about her health and how it's failed from the previous week, and she is absolutely going to die in their care if something isn't done almost immediately. So
right.
I'm hoping this Alan Dershowitz thing does something for them.
I hope that stands out for them. I really do. You know, Lisa, the other thing,
and nobody's talking impeachment yet either. I'm waiting for that to happen.
Yeah, well,
I'm serious.
I'm all on board with that. That judge needs to be.
Yeah. I don't know why we in this country are so worried about impeaching people that are not doing their jobs. You know, we're so protective of keeping people in their jobs. I don't understand that. I don't understand that. I'll never understand it.
Yep. It's part of the protections that we have to avoid usurpations of power like this that lead to this kind of tragedy. And we're not utilizing it. It's not being used.
Nope. Well, along the lines of another story, something I want to touch base with tonight, I think I pulled this story off of Duane Weed's Facebook feed today. The Daily Caller, Cindy and I, you and I have been kind of following, and we've had conversations like this for years. Daily Caller had a story today, report, EPA tested deadly pollutants on humans to push Obama admin's agenda. This is a pretty good read, and I have this up on the Culture Vigilante Facebook page. I think I also put it up on Missouri Grassroots Coalition and a couple other pages, probably at the Patriot Nation as well. There was a report, and I'll just read through this real quick. The EPA has been conducting dangerous experiments on humans over the past few years in order to justify more erroneous clean air regulations. The agency conducted tests on people with health issues and elderly, exposing them to high levels of potentially lethal pollutants without disclosing the risks of cancer and death, according to a newly released government report. These experiments exposed people, including those with asthma and heart problems, to dangerously high levels of toxic pollutants, including diesel fumes, reads the EPA Inspector General report obtained by the Daily Caller News Foundation. The EPA also exposed people with health issues to levels of pollutants up to 50 times greater than the agency is safe says is safe for humans. The EPA conducted 5 experiments in 2010 and 2011 to look at the health effects of particulate matter, or PM, and diesel exhaust on humans. The IG's report found that the EPA did get consent forms from 81 people in 5 studies, but the IG also found that exposure risks were not always consistently represented. So the long and the short of it is that we're being polluted to death. And then I also posted another story on Culture Vigilante and Missouri Grassroots. Let me see if I can pull that one up real quick about toxins and how they are affecting our health. And interestingly enough, when I posted this story around, I had to filter through the Facebook feed or the Facebook spam filters to get this posted. And I was also getting reports from folks on Patriot Nation that they were also having a hard time sharing. This is a story written by Dr. Mercola. And if you are a health food person, or, you know, you're an alternative medicine person, or you know very well who Dr. Mercola is, he does a lot of great work in this area. On Mercola.com, there's a story called Environmental Toxins Linked to a Rise in Autism. And it starts 3 decades ago when I was still in medical school. Autism affected 1 in 10,000 children. What changed between then and now to cause 1 in 50 children to become autistic? Quite a change there. Mounting research, not to mention plain logic, indicates that brain disorders are the result of excessive exposure to toxins from multiple sources, including the mother while in utero. One 2005 study by the Environmental Working Group found that blood samples from newborns contained an average of 287 toxins. Of these, 180 are known to cause cancer in humans, 270 are toxic to your brain and nervous system, and 208 have been found to cause birth defects or abnormal development in animal tests. Clearly, nothing good can come from exposure to so many toxin compounds.
Right.
And it goes on to say, this is a great article, so if you haven't had a chance to see it, go to Culture Vigilante, go to Missouri Grassroots, or go to the Patriot Nation. And let me see if I can find, there's another great. And there's more information, and it goes on, parents beware, infant soy can cause severe harm. Certainly, this isn't the first time infant soy formula has been linked to health risks. And what do they pay farmers to grow? Soy. It's often touted as an ideal alternative for colicky babies or those who are unable to tolerate milk-based formulas, but evidence actually suggests that soy formula may be one of the absolute most dangerous foods you can give your child, whether he or she is autistic or not. Autistic. For starters, it's been estimated that infants who are fed soy formula take in 3 to 5 birth control pills worth of estrogen every day, depending on the particular batch of formula and whether your baby is a big eater. As a result of such astronomical amounts of this female sex hormone, infants who are fed soy formula have increased risks of food allergies and thyroid disorders. And if you do any research on this at all, you will know that food allergies and thyroid disorders, especially thyroid disorders, are hugely on the rise. Most medical doctors do not know how to treat thyroid disorders. They don't know why people are getting diabetes. They don't know why people are massively obese. They don't know why your eyesight is failing. I mean, and it's all, I mean, all of this is completely related to each other. Let's see if I can find, there was another statement in here that just really summed it up very well. Let's see. Besides overexposure to environmental toxins already mentioned, I believe a variety of important factors that also may contribute to the rise in autism spectrum disorder, including but not limited to the following, the countless possible combinations of these and other factors could help explain why there's such a wide spectrum of autistic behavior. Gut dysbiosis, especially with combination with vaccines. They're talking about the things that are in vaccines. Vitamin D deficiency, electromagnetic radiation from cell phones, microbial toxins such as mold and yada, yada, yada. Just this is a great article. And if you get a chance to go there and read this article, you will find a lot of interesting things popping up that you may find that you can relate to. The fluoride that they're adding to the water, that they don't need to add, that they're still adding, the chlorine, all of those things.
Well, the chlorine, the fluoride that's being added contains arsenic to our water supplies and so forth. And you know, this is a really good article that really, you really got to be willing to read it and become educated because there's a lot in here.
Yeah.
But it's very good. And
Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's, that's another one. I was just going to say Alzheimer's is being attributed, may have been contributed to by DDT exposure. And another thing that they break into on here that is very important is that our food supply is being genetically modified. They're using genetic engineering to modify the plants and the produce that we eat, et cetera. We've got things happening, you know, they're giving antibiotics and all kinds of garbage and growth hormones and stuff to the cattle that go to these big cattle, come through these big cattle production facilities and so forth. And that then you've got the genetically modified, which, you know, gee, there's a company here in Missouri that seems to have the...
Mm-hmm.
The cap on the it seems to have a monopoly on that. You know, the things that we eat, the food that we eat, they're in control of our. Not only are they in control of our food supply as a result of this, but they are also finding that these genetically modified foods that are being sold in our grocery stores and so forth are presenting. Some are beginning to be aware of known health risks and unknown health risks going down the road. in terms of what we're going to be facing. And so it's, you know, I think there's a lot to this. And I know that our granddaughter has been doing a lot of research, and I've done some in the past, and I have quite a few friends and that have also done this same research. And, you know, the link to some of these things that are on the rise, like autism and ADD, ADDHD, and the relationship between that and some of the, vaccines that our children are given.
Yeah.
And because they put mercury in the vaccines that they give now.
Yeah, and I mean, I've heard about this for years. Even when my kids were young, I was hearing about it. But at that time, it sounded like tinfoil hat stuff, and so many people were getting the vaccines, and nothing was ever happening to them. But we don't know if the results or the effects of having these vaccines maybe just don't show up until much later in life, because this story goes on to say at a glance, state mandated diagnosis of autism by clinician for consideration in special education is linked to with a near 99% decrease in the rate of incidence for autism and ID. Mounting research indicates that brain disorders are the result of excessive exposure to toxins from multiple sources, including the mother while in utero. One recent study found that for every 1% increase in genital malformations in newborn males with a particular county, there was an associated 283% increase in autism. The correlation between genital malformation and autism offers strong support for the notion that autism is the result of parental overexposure to environmental toxins. Fluoride alone, which is still being added to many public water supplies around the U.S., can contribute to severe to a 7-point drop in a child's IQ score on average. That's great to know. When the U.S. National Toxicology Program was enacted in 1978, some 62,000 chemicals that were already in use were simply grandfathered in, even though they'd never been tested for toxicity. I mean, this is a great article. You need to read this article because there's so much in it. And
there is.
And, you know, when I was growing up, people did not have allergies to peanuts and strawberries and, you know, lettuce and everything on the plane. You know, everybody's. I've as an older person have developed a lot of food allergies that I didn't have when I was younger.
Right.
You know, it's not just a coincidence anymore. You got to start looking at this stuff.
People who are lactose intolerant, who have allergies to gluten. It's just, and really serious disorders as a result. My niece has developed that, a gluten. She cannot eat anything with gluten in it. She becomes really ill. And, you know, this stuff did not, I'm sorry, I'm 60 years old, and I'm telling you, these things are dramatically on the rise. And there's a reason for it, and it's not, I really believe that it is the toxins that are getting into our food and food supply.
Yeah, and the genetically modified food.
Absolutely. You know, that thing about the soy, I think you said that not only the soy grown in the United States, in addition to all the problems that soy can present, is the fact that the vast majority of soy grown in the U.S. is genetically engineered. So on top of the fact that there are some issues with soy to begin with, then you add that factor to it where you've genetically engineered and changed the plant's genetic footprint and how it was originally designed and existed, and you turn it into you're really messing with things. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know what the outcome's going to be.
And the next time you
Monsanto,
go to the grocery store, read those labels, folks, because soy is in everything.
It is
everything.
It is, and it's not easy to get away from a lot of this stuff, but anything that you can do to get away from it, the better off you're going to be. And
the government is paying farmers to grow it.
Yes, and they're paying farmers not to grow other things. And they're allowing Monsanto to get away with owning the seeds and these genetically modified. Monsanto owns the genetically modified and engineered seeds that around the world. They have an absolute monopoly on that. And there's big money in that. And they say that it's to help feed the world, and that is just not true. And if and the thing about the genetically, here's another problem with the genetically engineered seeds, is that when you do that, plants work. Okay, I believe in God, so when God created the plants, they bear seed, and they bear true to themselves, and you can collect the seeds, and you can grow next year's crops from letting some of your seeds go to plant this year. But if you have crops grown near where you're growing your crops that have been genetically engineered and modified, and they cross-pollinate, your plants and your seeds are going to be affected. And I'll tell you how big a monopoly Monsanto has. If they find anything that is distinctive in so far as their genetically modified seeds go, present in your seeds, then they can sue you for violating
because
their
own the
copyright
patent.
Or their patent on it. And the problem is that once your seed has been cross-pollinated, they can find that evidence. Now, that's not going to make a difference right now to Cindy planting her little garden out here with non-hybrid seeds. We don't use GMO seeds. But it will to big farmers that are trying to do that. And there are farmers that are, and we've got them here in the area that Chuck and I live in now, that use non-genetically modified seeds. They use non-hybrid seeds that will grow true to themselves, that have not been genetically engineered. But if you've got other farmers nearby who are using them, then they can cross-pollinate their crops and contaminate their crops. It's a real problem.
Yeah, it's just scary. I think we're going to have I think I've got a line. I've been working on a line on getting a doctor to come on and discuss this very, very important topic and give us a real medical perspective on what this kind of toxin exposure and food exposure to these genetically modified foods will do to us. So I'm working on that, and I'm hoping to be able to have that guest on very soon. We're going to absolutely explore this topic more at length as time goes by. It's very important, and the government's role in this and what they're allowing to get through, because, you know, everything is regulated to the nth degree anymore. You know, people need to be aware of what's going on in their what's absolutely going on in their grocery stores and what they're pulling off the shelves and putting in their bodies and how it's affecting their health care, because right now we are at the height of a huge health care battle. And, you know, as we all get older, I'm telling you, I'm fighting certain battles that I never thought I would be fighting with my health, you know, and I eat right and I do all the right things, and you still can't stay healthy. So there's got to be a reason, and it's got to be beyond, you know, what we're being dealt with. So we're going to absolutely explore that and more as time goes on. So stay with us. Tell you what, let's take a break, and we will wrap up the evening with some odds and ends that we haven't touched on, and we'll be right back.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes, can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
majesties.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and I'm with Cindy McGee. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Every week we say we're going to probably have a short show. You know, we're going to just talk about a couple things, wrap it up early. But every week we never do that. So we have a bunch of things that we kind of want to touch on tonight. Just little tidbits of information to give you. We've kind of beat the Common Core thing to death, but there was an article, let me see if I can find it now, on American Spring that came out.
From Jesse.
About the email.
Email?
Have you got
the email?
Oh,
I
yeah. Yeah, AmericanSpring2011.com. Leaked DESE MASA email reveals spite, Common Core, bigger picture. And I think they posted that today. Today, in a Senate hearing on Common Core legislation, a leaked email from DESE became public. The email from DESE talks about the Common Core battle being waged in Jefferson City. This email contains observation from the private lobby organization, Missouri Association of School Administrators. And let me tell you, there are a million of these associations all over the country that manipulate your school boards, folks, and it's all teachers union related. This email labels opponents of Common Core as right-wing activists. Oh, that's not good. It also offers a variety of empty talking points, the kind typically issued from supporters of Missourians surrendering the illusion of local control over our districts. The slanderous, outrageous, and blatantly false characterization of Common Core opponents seeks to create the fertile ground for the false narrative that opponents of Common Core are Tea Party extremists and obstructionists or conspiracy theorists in need of tinfoil hats. Nothing could be further from truth.
I think there's a particular Missouri legislator who may have been drinking their Kool-Aid, don't you?
Yeah, and you know what? He's up for primary, too. He's being primaried, so that's cool.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so this email, so I've got a – and it lists – let's see. Your contact with senators is crucial. Okay, this is a copy of the email. It's crucial for the Common Core debate. Your legislators need to know that Missouri learning standards, which are aligned with the Common Core state standards, are supported by yourself, your district, and your educators. They are getting a lot of pressure from right-wing activists around the state to pass legislation prohibiting the implementation of the new standards. The threat to abandon 4 years of work that Missouri educators and school districts have dedicated to this initiative is very real. As MASA has engaged with legislators at the Capitol, it is clear that they are only hearing from the detractors of Common Core. So, and it goes on. And it goes. This goes, folks, what we were talking about before the break, about goes on behind the scenes in your schools and where the focus is. It is not with your kids. It is with the unions, the money grabbers, it's the bureaucrats, the educrats. They don't give a damn about your kids. They care about their own agendas. And you can go to AmericanSpring2011.com and read the rest of this article. But I'm telling you, folks, it's just scandalous. I mean, I live in St. Charles County, Missouri, and the county and the the district that I live in, it has got a very contested school board race going on because they're experiencing a lot of growth. What's happening in the district I live in now is what happened to the district that I lived in when I sat on the school board. They had a large school district, growing population, a lot of money flowing into it, and they had a union-controlled school board. Well, now there's a threat the union could lose more seats in this upcoming election. And I was sent an email a couple of days ago by one of the candidates. He got a hold of an email that a document by the union with much of the same verbiage in about how you have to go out and vote because these right-wing activists, crazy tinfoil hat party types are trying to take over the school board, and it was pretty much literally worded that way, and call it, and they lie about you. They call you book burners, and they, you know, extremists, and, you know, Christians, and all these things, you know, they're just so terrible.
Yeah, terrible things, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it's real. It's very real. I mean, you know, you wouldn't think that it's going on in your schools, but I'm telling you, folks, it's going on in your schools. It's going on in your school board elections. If you want to maintain control of your school district and all of the money, because it's really about the money, there's too much money in education. That's why all of these special interest groups are so interested in maintaining control of it. If you want to get some semblance of control back into it and make sure your kids get a good education, you need to turn out on Tuesday and vote. And I'm telling you, don't vote for the union-supported candidate, because it's going to lead you the wrong way every single time.
Right, which means you're going to have to do some research and find out who's running and what their background is.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's still time to do that. You know, most of the newspapers and most of the school districts will post that stuff on their websites and stuff, and you can read about them. I'm hosting a gathering at my house on Saturday for my neighbors to try to introduce them to some of these folks, because they're not going to, you know, the only information that most people get, and, you know, most of the people just put their kid on the bus and they don't pay attention and they listen to what their teachers tell them. You know, they don't get the other side of it. So you've got to reach outside of your bubble and reach out to your neighbors and tell them what the other side is, because they're not going to get it from the schools.
Right. Nope, they're not.
All right, what else is going on?
Well, and, you know, another interesting thing, as long as we're on the Common Core thing, just a little tidbit, a little something that happened yesterday that I found really interesting. You know, an alert went out telling people to contact Representative Jeannie Riddle, because the Google lobby was at the Capitol talking to them about HB 1873, saying that it needed to die because it would make it illegal and prohibit students to get on the Internet at school, which is a totally false statement. That is not true. And I found it very interesting that somebody with the amount of clout that a Google lobbyist would have is in our Missouri legislature fighting the fight on Common Core. And basically HB 1873 is really to protect the students, the data collection, our students, our children, from the data collection system that's built into the Common Core agenda, and to prevent that data from being collected and shared universally among stakeholders, which could be anybody that the government determines is a stakeholder. And there's already a list that should have all your hair fall out. So, stakeholders?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is
a horrible word.
Stakeholder. If my children are in a school, I am not a stakeholder. And the only person who has any real concern about what happens to my kids is me. You know,
and if there is a stakeholder, I am the only stakeholder.
That is it. That is just, that just really drives me crazy. That word used to drive me crazy when I was sitting on the school board. It drives me crazy still. And most people don't go as deep into the weeds on Common Core as you and I do, Cindy.
Right.
But I'm telling you, these folks that are driving this Common Core bus have labeled your kids as human capital.
Human capital. Those are their words, not ours.
Yeah.
All of the documentation about Common Core, their documentation, their papers, their writings, their agenda, their charts, their everything, they're the ones that use the terms human capital, referring to the students, and probably students' families, too, since data is not just collected on the students, it's collected on all family members. Stakeholders, those are all terms that they're using. Those are their terms, not ours.
Yes.
Your child is now considered human capital. That doesn't sound much better to me than your child being called one of the cattle.
They have completely depersonalized.
Which is exactly what it reduces your child to.
Right, absolutely. And when you do it long enough, I mean, it totally desensitizes everybody to it.
Sure.
It just drives me crazy. So most people don't have a problem being called a stakeholder in their school district. You know, that just really drives me. I don't stand for that.
Well, and,
very,
and when you
well.
Use such a generic term as stakeholder instead of parents, then
yeah.
then you
it, it minimizes
can
your...
then be applied to anybody, to a lot of other people other than the parent. Certainly,
sure.
the
like a
school,
Department of Family Services worker.
Well, thank you, and the hospital.
Sure.
Doctors, they're all stakeholders over your children as well, don't you know? They're all stakeholders. No, they're not. And
yeah.
it doesn't take a community to raise a child or a village to raise
yeah.
a child. But this
they've
is what they
you,
promote. That's what they believe.
Yep. They've brought you into the arena of your personal child-rearing rights, and you shouldn't allow that stuff to happen. It's just disgusting. Oh,
they absolutely
okay.
want you not to have sole input in your child's life. They because they don't believe you're competent to raise them to do what they want them to do.
Right.
That's the key right there.
Yep. Because when you have control, they don't, and vice versa.
Right. And
okay.
parents are being, you know, we're going to be nothing more than baby factories, and as soon as the child is born, we hand it over to the state to raise for us. Down there, some parents would probably be just fine with that as long as they could collect their welfare checks. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't say that out loud, people.
Yes, she did. The Internet lives forever. There was another story in The Blaze today that I just kind of caught the tail end of, but it's something that keeps popping up every once in a while. People do it. Just I think this is something that, you know, you just need to have one ear on the ground. It says, chilling, why an unreported significant incident of domestic terrorism might not be a failed attack at all. And I think this is an attack on a power grid. On April 16th, 2013, six men launched an attack on a critical power station in California. The attack consisted of hundreds of AK-47 rounds being unleashed on 10 large transformers, and it was first called vandalism. Vandalism? Vandalism? Really? Okay. But the former chairman of the Federal Energy Regulation Commission calls it the most significant incident of domestic terrorism involving the grid that has ever occurred. It has largely gone unreported, although The Blaze did cover it last December. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry tells The Blaze, if it was a terrorist attack, the electric power industry and the media are almost certainly in error to describe it as a failed attack. A former CIA director, James Wolseley, added, without electricity, we aren't a civilization, and this is a major societal vulnerability. I just finished watching, my favorite TV show is Revolution, and I just finished watching Jericho last week, because I love my new Netflix, but I don't have cable anymore, so I'm watching all these old TV shows. And, I mean, just to give you an idea of what would happen to us, you need to watch these shows. Anyway, 1 week ago, a former chairman of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission told the Wall Street Journal that the sabotage of the California Transformer substation was the most significant incident of domestic terrorism involving the grid that has ever occurred. The words of warning ignited a flurry of news reports across the nation about the potential terrorism dry run. And they have a diagram on here. The concern coverage is dangerously delayed. While The Blaze reported on it last December, only last week did the brazen Silicon Valley attack gain more attention because the journal did a story nearly 10 months later. And anyway, you can go to theblaze.com and see this story. I mean, and it outlines exactly what would happen. I mean, if people were successful in taking out a power grid, it's just frightening.
Right. And they're
and
doing
the
an
fact
expose
that it's not being
tonight.
Reported.
Yeah, and they're doing an expose tonight on the Blaze TV through Real News and For the Record. There are two shows on there. They're doing an hour-long expose this evening, which is probably over by now, but they were going to do it on this very subject and what they've uncovered. And this one incident in California is not the only incident, and it is very concerning. And our grid, if our grid is taken down, that incident in California took part of their grid down for a month.
Hmm.
took them a month to do some of the repairs that needed to be done. And, I mean, they were able to mitigate that, but nonetheless, it was a really serious incident. But if they're successful in taking the grid down, and because the grid is so interconnected, if you can attack and take a major component of the grid down, you can bring the grid down in a large section of the country. Now, think about your life without electricity for 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, exactly. And how do people expend that many AK-47 rounds on a transformer and not get caught? And how does that story not get reported?
Right.
How does that happen in this world? Although,
well,
I do have
to
say,
we're not willing to call terrorism what it is.
And I do have to say, when George Bush was in charge after the 9/11 attacks, you didn't hear anything about terrorism attempts either. And I think there were several that went on under his reign that just never got leaked to the media or the media never talked about. So I totally understand that, but I'm telling you, folks,
well,
it's just.
And here's our nation's grid is divided. There are four sections in the country, four or five. Texas has its own grid, and then the rest of the nation is divided into four separate grids that are completely interconnected. So I want you to think about that. If you take down one of those four sections, you've taken down a quarter of the country's electric power. You cannot imagine the chaos that would ensue from that, particularly if it took months to repair and to fix, which it could. Don't kid yourself, it really could, because we have a grid system set up that is so interwoven and interdependent. It's basically just picture dominoes. And that's how the grid system is set up. You effectively knock down a substation, and all the dominoes in that area are going to fall. It's just what's going to happen.
Yep. You can't.
As each of those falls, you've got damage that's being done. Potentially, you've got damage being done along the way. Now, I'm
There's
not
no
an
water.
Expert on this, but I have studied it, and it's very frightening. You know, it's kind of. An attack like this could have the same result as an EMP.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just the fact that you don't have lights. You can't run your washing machine. There's no water because you can't pump water. There's no, you know, there's nothing. I can't start my gas stove without an electric spark. Yeah.
Right. Your grocery stores no longer can keep food safely.
You can't pump gasoline.
Life support and medical machines are in serious trouble.
Huge.
You think about all the different ways that your life depends on electricity. The roadways are no longer safe because traffic signals no longer work. Your computers are down. Your cell phone is down, potentially.
No internet.
No internet connection. You've lost all connection that you're used to. The impact on an economic level would be unimaginable.
What
it could do. It would be a really effective way to hurt us.
Yep,
and
you need to keep an eye on that story, for sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I guess one last thing that I kind of wanted to talk about that I'm partly remiss for not keeping up on this, but last session, the driver's license issue was a huge thing here in Missouri. We had a serious thing with our driver's license bureaus were collecting data and sending them to MorphoTrust, which is a French-owned company, sending all of our data to a foreign company and through the federal government, which is against the law, actually. Missouri doesn't apply with Real ID, but we do, and we don't impeach our governor for it. So anyway, there's a Missouri House, and I haven't kept up on this, and I haven't done the research on it, and I'll try to do that for next week. But it was a huge, huge deal. The people were all up in arms about it. You know, they're taking biometric photos of folks, and they're putting them into this huge national database, sending them to Washington, D.C. You know, France. It's a French-owned company that's running this thing running all of this data collection that Missouri is sending every time you get your driver's license renewed, all your birth certificate and your photo scans and everything about you goes through this database. And people were really up in arms over it last session. And the Speaker of the House, who we all know and love, called a bogus investigative committee to investigate it, and you know everybody was going to just take care of this problem. And in this session, the long and short of it is not a damn thing has been done to change any of the issues. You know, we're still issuing driver's licenses off site. You know, there's all the information still going to Morpho Trust. Nothing's happened except there was a bill, I think, that's circulating through, and this was in the Ozark Area Network News. Missouri House passes driver's license renewal change. Missouri drivers would not need to show your birth certificates or any source documents when renewing their driver's license under legislation passed by the State House. Well, whoop-de-doo, they did that last session, didn't they? Yeah. Under the measure, only a reasonable belief of fraud could cause a driver to be required upon renewal to show license clerk documents that prove lawful residence. But you know, so folks, folks in Missouri, your identity is still being compromised, and your Missouri legislature has not done one thing this session, as far as I know, and we'll look into it.
I know that they were working on I don't know if it's passed the lease. I think they were working on a bill that would require them to issue your new license at the counter. In other words, that would bypass
to bring it back on site.
But I don't know if it's passed.
Yeah, and you're not hearing a damn thing about it. Nobody's talking about it in the legislature.
No.
Yeah.
And it's really – that should have been front and center this year when they started the new session to deal with those terrible – because it really is bad. And it is – and, you know, again, I have to confess, it's one of those things that, you know, that we've got so much coming at us, it kind of falls off the radar. And there's something new every day. So
yeah. Well, we're so busy trying to get Common Core passed and trying to get Right to Work passed, and you know, it's a shock and awe tactic, and I'm sure it's intentional.
Trying to stop Obamacare from coming into our state any further, and trying to
Medicaid
prevent our legislature from finding a way to expand Medicare in the state. You know, I mean, there's so many different battles going on. You know, trying to preserve voter integrity with the, you know, going back to the paper ballot. And there are a lot of big and small fights going on right now that are all important, and it does get to be overwhelming, but we just have to stay the course.
Absolutely. Well, Cindy, have we hit about all the topics that we planned on hitting for one evening?
I think we probably have. I'm sure there's something else.
I'm sure there probably is.
Those who are listening will probably be relieved if we don't.
Yeah, well, some things to look forward to in the future, folks. We are going to have some more information on this toxic exposure and what it does to you. We're going to follow up on that. Talk to Frida Keough today from Missouri Precinct Project. They have some news on paper ballots. We'll have some information on that in some upcoming shows. We do have a Missouri teacher who will be on with us relatively soon. I'm not exactly sure when, in the next couple of weeks, to talk to us about her experiences with Common Core. And that's good for starters. We're going to keep in touch with Dave. Well, Dave was on with us a little bit before we went on the air talking about state sovereignty issues and Article 5 and those kinds of things and what's changing here in Missouri for that. Tune in with Dave on Friday and Saturday nights to get that information. Cynthia Davis is on Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. with Homefront. She's always got a great lineup of guests to cover various topics. We love listening to Cynthia. And we are on here every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Cindy joins me here on Culture Vigilante with Missouri Grassroots Radio. You can follow me on Facebook and Twitter as well, and look for us on MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Go to the website, join us there. Look for us on Facebook there, Missouri Grassroots Coalition. And until next week, folks, have a great week. Stay on top of things. Make sure that you vote on April 8th if you are in Missouri. Get out and vote in those school board elections. And join us here again on Wednesday night. Good night. God bless America.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.